The game is over. Your Bucks postgame show starts now. Welcome to Bucks Talk. Insight, analysis, and your chance to sound off on the game you just heard. Now to break it all down, here's your host, Justin Garcia.
Well, this was a really good win by the Bucks tonight to get your first win of the season in a game played without Damian Lillard, previously 0-5. But the performances from Giannis, from Chris Middleton, from Pat Beverley as well, across the board. But really, one of the things that stood out the most to me was Malik Beasley, because this is not the first time we've seen this from Bees. And I think this is the most, one of the most encouraging parts moving into the postseason is this was a game where Malik Beasley did not have certainly an efficient first three quarters. You could argue it wasn't a good first three quarters. Just 3 points. I believe it was 1 of 7 from the field. But Malik Beasley started to hit shots, and some of the biggest shots of the game to put this out of reach. But more importantly, what we've seen all season long from Malik Beasley is through it all, through any struggles he may be facing offensively, he remains engaged defensively. And yeah, Doc Rivers has talked about this a number of times. You know, we heard Adrian Griffin mention this when the season was beginning as well, in that, you know, nobody is expecting Malik Beasley to replace Drew Holiday. That's not the defense you're going to get from Bees. Doc has talked about, jokingly, I don't know who told you guys you were terrible defenders, but we've seen it on tape that you're not. So this is what we expect from you going forward. But the other thing that we've heard Doc Rivers mention, and it's just common sense as well, is, you know, you don't need Malik Beasley to be an all-defensive player. He doesn't have to be the best defensive player in the league. He can't be the worst, right? And, you know, we've heard that from other coaches recently as well. Darvin Ham was talking about that with his team. You can't be terrible. I don't need you to be great. You can't be terrible. You give me the effort. Your assignment's sure. You know where to rotate to. That's more than half the battle. And if you can do that, we can work with that. And Malik Beasley has more than done that through, what, 74 games this season. The playoffs are going to be a different story, but if the Bucks can continue to play this way and have the benefit of size and 2 7-footers, 1 7-footer that can roam and be the ultimate cleanup man, that helps somewhat. But it is going to be interesting to see playoff rotations for this team. And I think any Malik Beasley detractor, the first thing that they would point to is, look, the guy didn't play in the playoffs for the Lakers last year. What makes you think it's going to be different? I think as a casual Lakers observer last year, casual at best, the Malik Beasley I recall seeing last year versus what you're seeing this year, it's totally different. He was entirely there for his offense, and that is going to be the strength of Malik Beasley. It is the strength of Malik Beasley. But the asks have been different this season, and again, I think he has embraced the challenge. He has been a willing and engaged defender. That can hold up. I'm not suggesting Malik Beasley is going to be a lockdown guy in the playoffs, but that can hold up in the postseason. You just can't let him be a turnstile. You can't have him be a turnstile, I should say. And I think consistently for, what, 2 months now, 3 months, we have not seen that from Malik Beasley. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Look, the other things here. Chris Middleton, I saw a lot of chatter about what can you realistically expect from Chris. I had some of that conversation as well with a colleague on a different platform recently in the week. What you saw tonight from Chris Middleton, it evoked memories from the conference finals in 2021. But this is the big thing, is you got to have Chris Middleton healthy. If the Bucks don't have that, I'm not going to say they don't have a chance. It dramatically decreases their chances of advancing in the postseason. It does not get mentioned as much as it should, but when you think about lineups, right? I've pointed to some of the Bucks' ratings, offensive rating, defensive rating, net rating, when they have this group, when they have Giannis and Dame and Chris on the floor together, when they have their best four guys with Brooke Lopez, their starting five, and how that relates in terms of best five-man lineups in the league this season and best five-man lineups that we've seen from the Bucks over the course of the past six seasons. But if we just distill it to just Giannis and Chris Middleton, these are two guys that have played some of the most minutes together in the league since their time in the NBA, going on a decade now. The only groups that have more minutes together than Giannis and Chris Middleton play for the Golden State Warriors. That's the company that they're in. When you look at Draymond Green and Steph Curry, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, that's the list that's around Giannis and Chris Middleton. So there's that baked-in chemistry, knowing what the other is going to do, what they're looking for. We often joke about, man, Chris Middleton seems to be the only one that knows how to throw or properly throw the entry pass to Giannis. We saw one from Brooke Lopez. We've seen it more and more from Damian Lillard, but nothing compares to the Chris to Giannis lob. And that has to do with playing together as long as they have, as many minutes as they've played together, and in as many big spots as it is coming. And I think oftentimes, you know, Doc Rivers joked about after the game tonight, we take Giannis for granted. We continue to take him for granted. And I suppose we're doing it now, with just now getting to the point of, hey, by the way, Giannis had another near triple-double and another near 30-20 triple-double with 36 points, 16 rebounds, and 8 assists. And again, he was incredibly efficient tonight. But we can take that for granted. I think we take that longevity and that chemistry that exists between Giannis and Chris Middleton for granted as well. And, you know, look, it's always was going to take time for Damian Lillard to reach that point with Giannis. It's getting better. It may be a proposition that extends into next year. You're probably not going to peak this season because it takes time. But I think what is the ultimate security blanket and safety net is knowing, well, we do have this duo. So while Damian Lillard continues to develop that, to build that chemistry with Giannis, and not just Giannis, to be fair, with every other teammate that he has here, we've got this Giannis and Chris thing that we can lean on. You couldn't say that for the last, what, month and a half before Chris Middleton returned from that ankle injury. But I think we've seen since he's returned, and I know the record doesn't perfectly match up with, man, now they're off and running. But when you just look at the minutes of Chris and Giannis on the floor together, and especially the Chris, Giannis, Dame, and Chris, Giannis, Dame, and Brooke Lopez, all of that matches up with what we've said. And that, again, what you would point to for it, optimism is not the right word, but confidence. The reasons for confidence with this team going into the postseason when the Boston Celtics have been a juggernaut all season long, what you would point to is those guys. Is Giannis, is Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, and at this point, you have to lump in Malik Beasley as well, because that five-man preferred starting lineup for the Bucks, that is the best five-man unit in the league stacked up against all those other teams. It's the best we've seen here in Milwaukee. And they continue to get better and build that chemistry. So that's the biggest thing you would point to. Everything else we've gotten into in the past as well, the Bucks' record in games against the best teams in the league, it coincidentally, ironically, I suppose, their struggles have come against teams like the team they were playing tonight, the Atlanta Hawks. Those teams at the middle of the pack, in the bottom 10, somewhere around there, and especially teams that were shorthanded, which the Atlanta Hawks very much were tonight. So I think that makes this a very good win for the Bucks, the way they responded as well. And Doc Rivers said, we called an early timeout, not so much to change coverages or make any adjustments, just to say, guys, calm down. If we play the way that we know we should, if we play the way we talked about before this game, we'll be fine. And that's what you start to see. The other thing that stands out, we'll get to throughout the course of the show tonight, the shot chart. And this is another thing that the Bucks are going to have on their side, in their favor, in most matchups that exist out there. But the shot chart and the way the Bucks played offensively, where they found their offense from, not from just one guy, from multiple players, was a big, big key in their success in this victory tonight against the Atlanta Hawks. So one game left on the road trip. And as I mentioned, this is the stretch now. These are arguably the most important games because you do have the Celtics left on the schedule. You do have two games with the Thunder, or one game left with the Thunder on the schedule. You do have two games left with the Magic. Magic won tonight. They've been struggling of late. So up until those struggles, those games seemed a little more important. That Celtics game, who knows who you're going to see in that game. So the games leading up to that stretch are very important because those are going to be the games you would circle and say these are the most winnable games on the schedule for the Bucks. Tonight was one of those, and you started with a win. Now you have three more, and they all come consecutively starting Tuesday. We'll take a closer look at those matchups and the Eastern Conference and hear from you as well. 855-616-1620, the number to join us on Bucks Talk. I mentioned the shooting chart, where the Bucks found their offense. We'll open that discussion up next on Bucks Talk.
The hardwood homilies continue after this. This is Bucks Talk.
Also, Brooke has to do a better job of calling for the ball, right? You got to get in the post. When you got that mismatch, you got to put your hand up and call for the ball. If we're not getting it to you, we can address it. But you've got to call for it, and we got to get it to you. I mentioned the shot chart and how you win on nights where the opponent hits nearly twice as many threes as you, when the opponent shoots 12 basis points higher on three than you, they shot 40%, you were at 28%. How you win and how you offset that is efficiency, is taking advantage of the mismatches that you do have. And that's what the Bucks did tonight. You look at that trio. Whenever we talk about the Bucks' size, it's going to come down to three guys. It's going to be Giannis, Brook Lopez, Bobby Portis. Those three guys took 35 shots tonight. Four of them were three-pointers. That is not the usual shift that we see. That is not the usual split, I should say, that we see. It's not necessarily 50-50, especially when you have Giannis taking a high volume of those shots. But you see more than four three-point attempts. Four three-point attempts out of 35 field goals. On their twos, they collectively, that trio, shot 65%. Now, Bucks as a team tonight shot 70% on their twos. So again, that's how you can offset what an opponent is doing from three. You're efficient on your twos. You're taking those easier shots, and you're converting them. And that's what those three guys did. But it was up and down the line when we talk about two-point shots, right? There was a lot of struggles from three. Nobody's disputing that. 8 of 28 is not ideal. But on twos, Chris Middleton was 6 of 7. And Chris, by the way, was efficient everywhere. 3 of 3 on threes. But on twos, 6 of 7. Giannis was 12 of 21 on threes. He was the guy that struggled the most on your threes, on twos. Brook Lopez was 2 of 2. Malik Beasley was 2 of 3. Pat Beverly was 4 of 5. Bobby Portis was 6 of 8 on his twos. Pat Connaughton hit his only two. Efficiency inside of the arc. And that's the other thing. Recognizing, look, we're not knocking down threes. Here's where we do have the advantage. Let's take advantage of it. That's crucial in the postseason. I think not to pick at a scab here, but we saw 24 hours ago, locally, when you don't have the threes and you keep taking it, you've seen what that can look like. So recognizing when something isn't working and finding, wait a minute, we do have the advantage here. Let's use that. That, to me, was one of the biggest factors in this victory tonight. 855-616-1620, the number to join us on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with Justin in North Carolina. What's going on tonight, Justin?
My man, I think we got the two greatest mothers in all of the Bucks post game because we're both Justin, right? So, what you mentioned about last night, just so tough, and I don't want to segue to that because it's Bucks, but I was really hoping we had Dave Kane talking to Wes Matthews and Jay Crowder at the end of the game tonight, and Doc Rivers, about how we could find a way to beat the Duke Blue Devils and get to another Final Four for our beloved Marquette Golden Eagles, our 4-1-4 guys. But anyways, tonight was excellent. I know there's a lot of Bucks fans, and shout out to my guy, Bucks fan Dick in Port Washington, right? I know there's a lot of Bucks fans that probably feel like we should have won by a lot more points. I'm not really looking for that. I'm just looking for the energy and the moxie on the court as we go forward. I saw it. And one thing that I wanted to say, especially when you're giving your analysis as far as exploiting mismatches, I truthfully believe if we had Doc Rivers last year, we do not lose to the Miami Heat because we had a significant mismatch with Brook Lopez and he was dominating and we went away from him. We're not going to do that this year. I am so excited to watch this playoff run, Justin, and I really think that we can really do some great things. And to be honest with you, I know Dame is still kind of getting into his stuff and getting into the Bucks stuff, but I think we're going to be fine because the thing about it, when you got two of the 75 at 75 greatest players of all time and one doesn't have a ring and the other one is just as hungry as the one that doesn't have a ring, I feel like we're going to continue to figure it out. And we don't know those behind the scenes conversations that are going on right now with our big three. And Middleton looked great, by the way.
Fantastic. And the Dame part, too, is, you know, I've talked about it before. I'm sure you would agree. I think a lot of times he faces unfair comparisons because it was never going to be as easy as playing NBA 2K. And Damian Lillard just steps in here and averages 30 points a game, right? He was Giannis in Portland for a decade. And now he's playing with Giannis, where you got to figure out, okay, realistically, we're not going to both average 30 and take a high volume or that high of a volume of shots. So we have to figure out our way around this. And I do think it's clearly gotten better since Doc Rivers arrived. That was that and the defense. Fixing the defense were the two big tasks at the top of Doc Rivers' list here. But what's most interesting is, you know, we talked about this a little bit the other night, is that Dame has been impacted arguably more than anyone by some of the adjustments in officiating. And Doc Rivers, even before this became clear, hey, the league is officiating a little differently. Like they've seen the offense. They saw Karl Anthony Towns put up 60 and probably thought, all right, let's do something to address this. But Dame's the guy individually that seemingly has been impacted the most. He's gone from 6th to 27th. In free throw rate since these adjustments were rolled out. He's not getting to the line as much. He's not getting those calls. Doc has even mentioned he's on the video, so he's not going to get the calls, and I've tried to tell him, don't look for those. But what you usually don't see, and again, why it's, all right, this is encouraging to point to for the playoffs, is while he's not getting to the free throw line as much, his scoring has basically been flat. Pre-All-Star break versus post and pre-rule changes or officiating changes, I should say, to post. But everywhere else, he has been much more efficient. He's shooting the ball at a higher rate. He's shooting from three at a higher rate.
So what's frustrating as a Bucks fan, though, and I'm glad you mentioned that as far as what the referee is going, right? Because Dame's not getting the calls that he deserves. But what's really frustrating to us, and hopefully I'm speaking on behalf of a lot of other fellow Bucks fans, is when we look at insert guy here, role player for the opposing team, and he will get that call that Dame used to get. So if we're going to call it and we're going to eliminate it from the game, I'm okay with that, but it has to go both ways. And then I couldn't call you after the Lakers game, but Giannis's whistle is just terrible. It's just terrible. You let a guy, Anthony Davis, tackle this guy, and if it was a 2024 NFL season, that might be a fine for the hip check tackle that he did on him going for the alley-oop. So, and I guess my thing is, and I don't want to sit here and make it seem like I'm giving you a sob story for the refereeing, Justin, but again, we have two 75 at 75 players. They, and our whole life, and Justin, you're a Bucks lifer like I am. Our whole life we always heard, oh, when Kobe comes to town, when Shaq comes to town, when Steph comes to town, when Michael Jordan comes to town, they get those calls because they are those guys. And yeah, we had to swallow that because we had your Todd Days, your Blue Edwards, your Big Dogs, Ray, et cetera. Go down the list, right? We have two of those guys now, and we still don't get the calls. So I'm going to go, and I'm going to let the other Bucks Nation call in. But my question for you that I would love for you to answer is, why is it when Dame comes to Milwaukee, all of a sudden that whistle isn't there anymore?
Thanks for the call. And next time you call in, we can just, one by one, go back and forth listing Bucks players from the 80s and the 90s. Ken Norman, we can throw in there as well.
My brother.
thanks for the call, Justin. Look, I think it's easy to say the league hates the Bucks and they don't get a fair whistle. And I'm not saying that's what Justin was implying. I know there's a lot of it out there. It's frustrating, I think is the best way to put it, when look, we talked about this years ago, that there was a lot of goalpost moving taking place with the Bucks during that ascent to elite team in the league, to championship caliber team, perennial championship caliber team. Think about the amount of times goalposts were moved. The first year under Bud, when the Bucks won 60 games, surprising everybody. You remember the discourse coming into that season amongst all of us was, wouldn't it be great if the Bucks could finish fourth? Because remember, the Bucks were going on a two-decade stretch of not having gotten out of the first round of the playoffs. So the hope was, man, if they can finish in the top four, we can have home court advantage. There's a pretty good chance the Bucks are finally getting out of the first round of the playoffs. Then you started 7-0. And then you noticed, well, Giannis has gotten better year after year after year after year, but man, he seems even better this year under Bud. And that was the big talk, too, is I know how to unlock him. And it became crystal clear, hey, this, the Bucks and the Raptors, it's down to these two teams in terms of who's going to win the Eastern Conference. And as we started to progress further and further through the season and got close to the playoffs, then it became, well, I mean, the Bucks are not a deep team. I like the Raptors more because the Raptors are better. Raptors are a deeper team, even the Sixers. And look, to be clear, those were two very good teams. The Raptors, obviously a good team. They won the championship. Sixers, by the numbers, gave them the toughest challenge that they had in the postseason. But it was, yeah, the Bucks aren't a deep team, so they're not good enough. When the Bucks made those adjustments and said, okay, let's change our starting lineup. They don't have enough talent. Right, it doesn't matter how deep you are. You can only play five guys at a time. Who cares about how deep you are? It was just one after another. When the Bucks made those adjustments, you trade for Drew Holiday, you're not deep enough. You didn't have Drew Holiday, it's who cares about your depth? Kind of similar with this, where you bring in Damian Lillard, and I've talked about this quite a bit, the importance of fixing your half-court offense. Look, the Bucks knew their defense was going to take a step backward. I said before the season, when we did our season preview show early on in the season as well, look, if they can finish 12th, 13th defensively, I think that's a success. Because that should be good enough if the offense is elite and to the level we think it's going to be at. But the big thing was, you've got to fix the half-court offense. You can't not score in the postseason. You can get stops, but you've got to score when you get these stops, and the Bucks were just unable to do that. So when you made the trade for Damian Lillard, it was okay. We've taken a massive step towards fixing our half-court offense, as Justin pointed to, two all-time 75 guys in Giannis and Damian Lillard. But everything that Dame brings with his skill set, with obviously his shooting ability, which again was another thing that escaped the Bucks during the playoffs. You can have good regular season shooters. Postseason shooters are something different. Damian Lillard is not one of those guys. Damian Lillard gets to the free throw line. Damian Lillard gets that type of whistle where you look at all these things and say, we solved it. We finally did it. And then wouldn't you know it, the league says, all right, let's crack down on this. In this one, I don't think it's goalpost moving. I don't think it's any vendetta or agenda against the Bucks. I do think it is purely coincidental in that offense had gone way too far in this league. And as Doc Rivers had said, unfortunately, Damian Lillard is on the video. And what we mean by that, what the league sends out, the clips that they have out there on their site, too. You yourself can see this on the NBA.com, where they have officials and Monty McCutcheon walking through the point of emphasis. And look, here's what we're trying to crack down on. Here's why it was not a foul and why free throws were not awarded. But Damian Lillard is on the video. You don't get those calls when you're the guy, more often than not, that we're trying to point out, look, these are the things we're talking about. A couple of years ago, it was James Harden. When the league, for the first month, 2 months of the season, and then it quickly dissipated, was trying to crack down on rip-throughs and all those other things of the grifting calls for fouls. So will it continue in the postseason? I don't know. None of us know. I do think the whistle you see in the playoffs is going to be much closer to what we've seen since January 31st than it is to what we saw before. But I don't know that it's going to be quite as... And extreme is probably the wrong word, but I don't know it's going to be quite to the level that we've seen since January 31st. But I think the big thing is, look, you just got to play through it. And I agree the whistle wasn't great against the Lakers, but I think most of that was consistency because the Bucks were able to do what they wanted for stretches of that game. They allowed a very physical game. As Doc Rivers said, you know, that's how we have to win. That's how we have to play. We're an older team. We're not the most athletic team on the perimeter. We got to win those physical games, not the track meets. And that's how that game was officiated for stretches of it. There were some questionable calls down the stretch, but I think the biggest complaint would be the consistency and not so much that, hey, the Lakers got a better whistle. But again, experiencing that, and this team has gone through that. Five postseason runs, but experiencing that and figuring out, okay, we got to regroup. We got to play through it. Move on to the next play. As Doc has kind of tried to preach to this team. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Big win, right? Don't laugh. Big win tonight in Atlanta, beating the Hawks without Damian Lillard. And as I mentioned, these are the teams that have given the Bucks problems. The teams that are not elites, not those top 10 teams, and teams especially that are shorthanded. And some of the challenges you faced along the way in those 48 minutes, to me, all of those things added up to a very big win for this Bucks team tonight. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. More of your thoughts after this. It's the blood of a champion. 122 to 113, the final from Atlanta. Bucks beat the Hawks. 1-5 now this season in games they play without Damian Lillard. Again, making sure it doesn't get lost in the shuffle. Giannis was incredible. 36 points, 16 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals. We can certainly get into the conversation a little bit later, but Giannis is... He's not going to win the MVP this season. Look, Nikola Jokic has been fantastic as well. Luka Doncic has been great. There have been a lot of qualified candidates for MVP this season. It's no longer the days when it was just two names, right? When it was down to Giannis and James Harden, or James Harden and Russell Westbrook, or Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. Or Steph and LeBron James. It's a larger field now. But I think the frustrating and discouraging part is it doesn't seem as though Giannis got a fair shake and was not considered as much as he should have been. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head back to the phone lines and check in next with Dick in Port Washington. What did you think about this one tonight, Dick?
It was a good victory. Professor Justin, I always love when he calls in from North Carolina. He always has great points. And the only thing I'll say was, I just wanted a victory. I don't really care about the points. He did bring that up. And I thought an interesting point. I thought it was hilarious when he compared the foul on Davis on Giannis at the end of the game as a hip swivel tackle. I mean, that's crazy. They want LA, and you can't tell me that there isn't a plant in that. My other point on this with Dame being part of the video, I mean, we probably all been part of a seminar or something where someone's trying to teach you something and saying, you got to look for this. And then you see the guy in the picture, that's going to be implanted in your brain. So I do think there's bias, and I think someone smarter than me, a statistician or someone, could actually go back and look at it, because on the internet there's been several times there's been pictures, and not only with the Bucks but other teams, where they'll have the exact same drive to the hoop. One's called a fall, one isn't. You know, it's change. Now, with that said, Dame's just got to realize that it's not going to change. It is not going to change this year. He's imprinted on the official's brain as we got to stop this from happening.
Yeah.
I'm still of the belief that when the playoffs start, we're going to be in better position than we are now. I don't think we'd fall into these traps where we're losing big leads. The game changes. It's a more of a half-court game. And I think Brooke, and I think Justin mentioned this also, is that Brooke's got to become more of a force underneath in the playoffs than he's been all season. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think he's hit close to 30 points this year. Last year, I think he had two, maybe three games where he had 30 points. He can dominate underneath if they play him right. And I think that's what we're going to need in the half court. And I'm tickled pink that Chris is playing the way he is. It's going to be, you're going to have mid-range. We're going to have all positions covered if he stays where he, I don't even want to say that. When he continues to play this way, we're going to be looking good in half-court offense in the playoffs. I still do not want to play Miami. I wish Justin would have referred to that. I just, my heart starts fluttering as soon as I think of us playing Miami. I used to think that way for Indiana. Not anymore.
No.
I'll take Indiana. I'll take Philly. The other night you said, oh, you worry about Philly because of
well, it's a number of things. I would still say Philly. Look, there's a healthy amount of respect for Miami, given what they've done to the Bucks routinely in the postseason. And the fact that, you know, I just don't know what you can really take from their regular seasons, because they are clearly a team, and Jimmy Butler specifically, it's all about conservation for the postseason. But to me, it is still the looming threat of Joel Embiid that terrifies me, with Tyrese Maxey and with Nick Nurse, too. The guy that is constructed, I get he doesn't have the same personnel in Philly, but the guy that has constructed the defenses outside of Eric Spoelstra that have slowed down Giannis the most.
Yeah, but we didn't have Dame Lillard as a backup to that, and he doesn't have a Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
In Philly, because that guy killed us. And my question with Joel, and Doc even said, I'm getting confused here, but when Doc was talking to me, he says, you know, we're still expecting Chris's legs to come back.
Yeah.
I bet Joel put on multiple pounds during this hiatus. He couldn't run, obviously.
Yeah.
It's going to take him a while. And any little tweak to that knee, I think his history, I'm not worried about him. I'm just not worried about him coming back. I'm worried.
I don't know about not worried.
Well, not worried. Yeah, he could get hot in that. He's not going to play like he was earlier in the season before this injury took place.
No,
he won't have enough time.
He's not going to be 100% of what he was before that because of what you just mentioned. It's going to be an on-ramp. Look, they've said, and they being Nick Nurse and Daryl Morey, that they expect him back before the regular season ends. So now we're getting to the point of, you know, you look at your watch and say, all right, we got seven
days.
Right. Yeah. So, and you would assume you want to get him at least a couple of games in the postseason. I think the big thing, or leading up to the postseason, the big thing is every single year, Joel Embiid has dealt with injuries going into the playoffs, and now you can make the case he's coming off of an injury, so it's the same thing. But this seems to be the closest to healthy he would be going into the postseason, assuming he's around 80%.
Right. And then what's going to happen with Maxey? I mean, he's going to have to change positions again, how he's distributing the ball, controlling the ball. It's kind of like what happened to us when we changed coaches. This time, we're changing players for Philly, and you're going to have the same issues. It's not going to connect right away. I'm not worried about Philly. I'm worried about Eric Spoelstra.
I think we're aligned in that. I'll, at the risk of eating my words, I will say I am not worried about the Indiana Pacers. Those five games before, that was a different coach, and we've seen some changes and a different defense. But also, there's no Benedict Mathurin. There's no Buddy Hield. Tyrese Halliburton doesn't appear to be the same guy he was. So that went from being one of, man, I don't know if you'd want to see them, to, all right, fine, I'll play the Pacers.
And they bought into the Flim Flam tournament, so they thought it was real important. It's not going to be important in the playoffs.
Your first point, so Brook Lopez had two 30-point games last season. He had one that was 29.
None this year.
He did have one this year, and very early in the season. It was that game in D.C. against the Wizards, who he'll see again in a couple of days, where he had 39 points. Okay.
Yeah, well.
But I agree with you, Dick, in your point of that. The Brook Lopez component, what we've heard Doc Rivers, how he's brought it up, too. And again, it stands out the most after the Thunder game, and he spent time talking about it tonight, in that we have the advantage with our size. We have to take advantage of that, and we got to get the ball to Brook more. He's got to call for it more. That I do think the way that this offense was essentially free-flowing the last 5 years, that's one of the bigger changes is, you know, the Bucks, they did not take advantage of mismatches. That just wasn't the way Bud played. It wasn't, we're going to deviate from what we do because here's an advantage. We're just going to keep doing what we do. That's not Doc Rivers' method. So I do think when you look at the negatives, if they're an older team, they don't have as much athleticism on the perimeter, that's all valid. But they do have a lot more size than just about every team in the league. And I do think Doc Rivers is going to utilize that in the postseason.
I agree. It's going to be different. The playoffs are going to be different. And one other thing I like about Doc is that he's saying that he's not concerned where our position is in the playoffs. I think Bud was a little bit more concerned about that. And I think it relaxes the players a little bit more. They're not putting pressure on right now. He's looking for function over finality here. You know, we want to change. We want to get ready. And where we lined up is where we lined up. Just not against Miami.
Look.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks for the call, Dick. And it's going to be interesting in that. I've talked about this before. The approach that team had in 2021, where it was, we don't care who we play, knowing the way they approached the final game of the regular season, where I believe the Bucks still won. I'll have to pull it up. But I want to say it was the Bucks won and still dropped down to third because Philadelphia or Brooklyn. Brooklyn won their final game as well. The way they approached it, where we started to hear, and especially after that series against the Miami Heat wrap, that they didn't care. We didn't care who we faced in the first round, and frankly, we wanted to face the Miami Heat because of what happened in the bubble. So we didn't duck anything. We didn't approach that final weekend saying, let's maybe do this. Let's try to shuffle. And you see every team just about do that in the postseason in terms of their seeding. All right, well, if we lose this game and if we lose our finale, we would drop down to fourth. It would mean we would draw this team. The Bucks avoided that in 2021. They did the opposite the following year. I do hope that's the approach once more, is that we don't care who we get, right? If we win, it could be set up again where you go into that final weekend, the two road games that you have, because we will get to the standings. And I think there's a couple of important numbers to point out from tonight. But it could be the case again where you know going into that game Friday night. So you play in D.C. on Tuesday. Then you come home Wednesday for a five-game homestand. Those five games, the Memphis Grizzlies, the Toronto Raptors, those three games in the immediate future, those are going to be big games for the Bucks because those are games you should win. And this was one of them too. I said all along, starting with the Hawks game in your next three games, those are arguably your biggest games of the season. Ironically, leading into a games against the New York Knicks, the Boston Celtics, the Orlando Magic, but you come home after that Wizards game for a five-game homestand. The Grizzlies, the Raptors, the Knicks, the Celtics, and the Magic. Then you wrap up the regular season with two road games, Friday and Sunday, in Oklahoma City against the Thunder, in Orlando against the Magic. We very well may hit the point where they know if we win this game on Friday night, 1 week from this upcoming Friday, in OKC against the Thunder, we win this game, we're locked into the two seed. If we lose, we drop down to sixth or third, I beg your pardon, and we may have a clearer picture on who's going to finish sixth and who are going to be the two teams in the play-in tournament. But I'm going to be very curious to see the approach that weekend. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll take a look at the standings. I mentioned the Bucks still two games clear of both the Cavs and the Knicks, but what about the rest of the East? We know the 10 teams that are going to be in the postseason. Outside of 1 and 9 and 10, everything else seems very, very fluid. We'll take a look at it after this on Bucks Talk.
You're listening to Bucks Talk.
Bucks win in Atlanta, beating the Hawks tonight 122-113. So again, Celtics are the one seed. They had long since locked that up. The Bulls and the Hawks are going to be 9-10. The order is TBD there, but it does seem as though the Chicago Bulls are likely to finish the 9 seed, and the Hawks will finish the 10 seed. So really the unknown is everything in between there. Now, we have some checkpoints and some tiers, I suppose we should say. So it seems as though 2-3-4 is one of those tiers that's in question. Who's going to finish in what order? Bucks, Cavaliers, and Knicks. Two games separating those three teams. The Magic are four games back of the Bucks right now in the loss column. So Orlando kind of seems like they're locked in to 5. Maybe they slide down to 6. But it seems like we know the Celtics are 1. We know the Bulls and Hawks are going to be 9 and 10. We know the Magic are going to be 5. So the unknown is 6 through 8 and 2 through 4. Bucks are two games up on those two teams chasing them. Now, I suppose you can't totally rule out the Magic because they do have two games left against the Bucks. But you still need a lot to go right. They would need to win both of those games because these two teams split their previous two games. They would need to win those two games. And I just keep coming back to 8 games left even before we reach the 8-game mark. I thought 51 wins. If you get to 52 wins, I think it's a lock that the Bucks will be the 2 seed. But even 51, you felt like if you can get there, that's a pretty good chance, just given what the teams behind you will have to do, and especially given some of the stumbles we've seen recently from the Cleveland Cavaliers. But in these 8 remaining games the Bucks have, let's say they go 4-4 and play 500. A 4-4 record would put the Bucks at 51-31. So the Cavaliers only have to get to 51. All the Cavs have to do is match the Bucks because they're going to have the tiebreaker by way of divisional record. Theirs is better than the Bucks. First time in 5 years that the Bucks didn't absolutely steamroll the Central Division. Cavaliers finished with a better divisional record, so if they finish tied, Cavaliers win the tiebreaker. So all Cleveland would have to do is get to 51 wins. So in other words, if the Bucks go 4-4, the Cavs go 6-2, they tie the Bucks, and they get the one seed. But Cleveland would need to go 6-2 to catch the Bucks. If the Bucks go 4-4, the Knicks would have to go 8-1 in their remaining 9 games to move past the Bucks because the Bucks hold the head-to-head tiebreaker against the Knicks. And regardless of what happens in that game they have left, April 7th, Bucks will still hold the head-to-head tiebreaker. Magic, as I mentioned, you can't totally rule them out, but again, 4-4 for the Bucks would get you to 51 wins. Orlando would have to go 8-0 to get there. They're currently 43-31. So the math is starting to become very much on the Bucks side. I've referenced playoff status quite a bit. 97% chance that the Bucks finish in the top three. 97% and 85% that they finish with the two seed. Again, that's 4-4 feels like that's the magic number. And that's why I pointed to this stretch that they currently are in and have. Atlanta, at the Wizards, home against the Grizzlies, home against the Raptors. Now, it's going to be interesting because part of that is a back-to-back. But if you put in the work now and take care of business in those games that you should expect to win, especially as you're moving into the postseason, right? We can have the conversation and have over, wow, the Bucks have struggled against those types of teams. And to be fair, it's not just the Bucks. A lot of teams have seemingly struggled against those types of teams. We just saw the Boston Celtics lose twice in a week to this same Atlanta Hawks team without Trae Young. So it's not just the Bucks. I get the frustration that we have because we follow the Bucks more than any other team, but I can assure you it is not just the Bucks that have stubbed their toe in these types of games. But the big thing is you got to show me you've turned the corner when the playoffs are on the horizon. So that's why these four games were huge, because of what's left. And again, you should expect to win these games. And if you do that, I mentioned 4-4. Well, if you get these next three, that means 1-4 in those final five games. Three of those would be at home, too. And as I've continued to point to, who knows who you're going to see in that game in just over a week when the Boston Celtics come to Milwaukee. They have long since clinched the one seed. I would assume you're going to see guys just because you don't want to get into the habit of we're just punting games and we're giving guys a week off, especially given 1-2 seed, well, all teams, not just the 1-2 seed, any team, 1-6, you're off for 5 days. When the regular season ends on Sunday, what is that, April 14th? You're not playing again until April 19th at the earliest, Saturday. Or April 20th, I beg your pardon, at the earliest. So you get off a week. So I really think it's going to be that final weekend that you would see guys rested. So I think you're going to see guys in that Boston Celtics matchup. But what's the level of urgency in that game? That's the big part. And again, that's where it's fortuitous for the Bucks to draw a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder as late as they do. Now, granted, it's much tighter in the Western Conference. The Thunder and Timberwolves are tied right now, but who knows if that's going to remain going into the final weekend of the regular season. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll take a look at who are the Bucks most likely to get. I mentioned the numbers, 85% chance they finish in the two seed. We just went through, hey, if you go 4-4, shouldn't be asking much for a team that's on pace to win more than 50 games, playing 500 for 8 games for 10 days, shouldn't be asking much. Using those same numbers, who are the Bucks most likely to get if they finish second? We'll take a look at that after this on Bucks Talk.
From sliding.
All right, so the numbers moving closer and closer, math, I should say, to being on the Bucks side. Again, just go 4-4 in these final eight games. You do that. It is not a lock, but it's highly probable that they will be the 2 seed. So what does that mean? Because, again, Celtics are the 1. We know that. Hawks and Bulls are going to be 9-10. The order is still TBD there. So it's really two tiers that we're looking at. 2 through 4 with the Bucks, the Cavs, and the Knicks. And then 6, 7, 8. Pacers, Heat, and 76ers. So we will certainly spend much more time on your preferred matchups and what to watch for probably towards the end of next week, because at that point we'll be a week out from the end of the regular season. By the time we get to, what, let's say April 5th, that Friday night, we'll have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen. I think by then, we'll know April 7th if the Bucks are the 2 seed. You win that game against the Knicks, regardless of what happens, unless the Bucks go, 0-3 in those games they have between now and then. Tuesday against the Wizards, Wednesday at home against the Grizzlies, Friday at home against the Raptors, unless they lose all three of those. If you win that game against the Knicks on April 7th, they're done, they're walled off, and you're probably the 2 seed at that point, depending on what Cleveland does. But as we look at 6, 7, 8 here, in terms of best odds to secure the 6 seed, right now that belongs to the Indiana Pacers, who have a 41% chance to get the 6 seed. 7 games remain on the season for the Pacers. 7 and 8 becomes important because if you're the 2 seed, and again, as we've said, we think the Bucks are going to be the 2 seed. If you're the 2 seed, you get the winner of 7 versus 8. Now, as I pointed out before, I get the hesitation over seeing Miami as the potential team there. Here's one of the differences that may be beneficial to the Bucks. Remember last year when you were the 1 seed, it was great. You climbed the mountain, you came back, you caught the Celtics, you passed the Celtics, you got the 1 seed. Well, not that anybody would turn down having home court advantage throughout the playoffs, but I think the one interesting caveat, the negative, if there is one, that comes with the 1 seed is the uncertainty until Friday night who it is exactly that you're playing. If you're the 2 seed, you know what, Tuesday, I believe it is, whenever that first play-in tournament game is played, Tuesday or Wednesday, you know who you're playing. That was the spot the Boston Celtics were in last year, where they knew immediately, okay, we get the Atlanta Hawks. Because remember, almost identical to what we're seeing a year ago, the 4 play-in tournament teams were the Hawks and Heat. Heat were the 7 seed. Hawks were the 8 seed. The Bulls and the Raptors. The Bulls were the 10 seed. The Raptors were the 9 seed. It certainly seems like it's going to be the 76ers and the Heat and the Hawks and the Bulls in your 2 matchups. So in this scenario, I mentioned the Pacers right now have a 41% chance of being the 6th seed. In other words, they would be out of the play-in tournament. The team with the highest probability to be the 7th seed is the Miami Heat. 42% chance right now that they will be the 7th seed. The team with the highest probability of being the 8th seed right now is the Philadelphia 76ers with a 74% chance. So by the numbers, it's telling us the Bucks are going to be the 2 seed, and it's going to be Philly versus Miami. Winner gets the Bucks. Again, knowing Tuesday who you play and preparing for that, to me, is much better than Friday. It's not as though you're totally blindsided, right? Your assistants that do the film study and start to do the scout, they'll watch the game, the 7-8 matchup when the Bucks were the 1 seed last year. You'll watch that game, and you'll see, okay, one of those teams is gone. We can cross that team off the list. The team that won, the Atlanta Hawks, we can cross them off our list. So now we got 3 teams we really got to key in on. Then you have that 9-10 matchup. All right, the Raptors lost to the Bulls. We can cross them off our list. We know it's either going to be the Bulls or the Miami Heat, so we can put all of our prep into this. One by one, as the days pass, it gets a little bit easier. When you're the 2 seed, you know immediately, all right, this is the team we have. Either way, it's not going to be a great draw for either of these teams. Probably, I should say. If you're the Bucks, the chances of Joel Embiid recently returned, we think, a recently returning Joel Embiid and the 76ers, a highly motivated 76ers team at that, to face their old coach Doc Rivers, or the Miami Heat, who embarrassed you in the first round last year, who did the same thing in the bubble, who did the same thing the year Bucks in 6 was born, and look, who I think we can say, on paper, they are not as good as they were a season ago. But you're not going to fool us with that again after we said the same thing a year ago. Gone are the days when it's the Bucks versus the Pistons or the Bucks versus the Magic. Those days are gone. And we can point to who would you rather play? I think we'd all rather play the Pacers or the Orlando Magic. It just doesn't seem like that's going to happen. The big thing is to get the ship headed in the right direction, to get this team where they need to be as the postseason is about to begin. And I think slowly but surely you're seeing that with this Bucks team. Tuesday night, the road trip comes to an end. The Bucks head to D.C. to take on the Washington Wizards. That is a 6 o'clock tip-off. 5:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to tune in after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk to you then.